This project was produced by Belong Aotearoa with the support from the J.R. Mackenzie Trust and Planet FM. The series is an exploration of the employment journey for people of migrant and former refugee background in Aotearoa. It features conversations with people of lived experience and experts who share with us their stories and their own perspectives.
Morena, welcome to Pass the Mic. I'm your host, Shebnam Nisha, and with me in studio is our producer, Gina Gonzalez. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Ricardo Menendez-March, who is a Member of Parliament for the Green Party of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Welcome.
Morena, Shebnam. Thank you for having me.
Cool. We'll just start. When you were a little kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, definitely not a politician. That wasn't in the cards. I kind of wasn't locked in, and I feel like in a very stereotypical, aspiring model minority kind of way, I think, I was very much encouraged to go into something like medicine.
Yeah.
So, you know, that typical, like, if you don't go into a field like medicine, potentially, you know, engineering or lawyering, your parents would worry about your prospects in the future. So
yeah.
I think later than in my teenage years, I had kind of locked in myself into going into medicine. I did actually get into medicine just before moving to New Zealand. So I have a semester completed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the next question. Where are you from originally, and what brought you to New Zealand?
So I was born in Mexico City, and my family is a bit all over the place in Mexico. They're from Mexico City to Veracruz, and obviously I've got whakapapa in Spain. But I grew up in Tijuana, Mexico, and my dad almost moved to Aotearoa, New Zealand as a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
But my grandmother got cancer, and then he decided to stay at home to basically look after her.
Yeah.
But that always was, I guess, a potential plan, due to the fact that in Aotearoa we have had a shortage of mental health professionals for quite a few decades. And initially I came to Aotearoa to study, but it was very much with the plan of good luck and hope you get residency and permanently migrate. And so that was the initial plan. That didn't really work out as a plan initially, but here I am. Yeah.
So which year was that when you came to New Zealand?
So I came in 2006. So I have officially now lived more than half my life as of a couple of months ago in Aotearoa.
Wow. Well, here we are, eh? Okay, so what is your overview of the migrant and refugee experience with employment in Aotearoa? We're going to be talking about that a little bit. Now that you're in Parliament and one of your focus is immigration, why do you think we need to look at the employment experience of migrants and refugees?
So I think the employment experience for migrants and refugees, including former refugees, I would say it's quite unique. It's different because for many people, they don't have the support networks that you would have if, say, you had been born here and all your family and support networks were here already. So it can be isolating being in a place where you don't have support networks, where you're expected to navigate employment on your own.
Yeah.
And that also means that you may be basically learning without the support of others what are your even basic rights. And this is why we do have conversations around migrant exploitation, around the additional barriers that refugees face when it comes to employment. And that is something that not only do I work with as a member of parliament, but, you know, having moved here and worked here as a migrant worker is something that I myself had to navigate as well. And that there's, I guess, unique circumstances that come with the isolation of not necessarily having an immediate support network upon arriving to the country.
Yeah. What is the definition of a decent employment?
Yeah, I think good work is one that, from a rights point of view, is one that guarantees you decent wages, that allows you to fully participate in your community. So that includes not just paying rent and your bills, but that allows you to participate, right? Which means it's like going to the movies, going to events that you enjoy, to have hobbies, and to find connections to in Aotearoa, because if you're just basically working to survive, that actually is part of the isolation. There are other elements such as being free from exploitation, having safe, secure hours in your works, that you're not, I guess, having to navigate suddenly having 1 week with a lot of money, then another week with very little. and where you're also free from discrimination in the workplace. And these are all things that I think we can aspire to, but I think, unfortunately, for many migrants and refugees, their employment situations do not match what I've just described. Yeah. And so there's challenges as well when it comes to that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I came here in 2011, and it was really hard for me to penetrate into the workforce myself. So, yes, it took me a long time to actually find something that that looks like decent employment. So how do you think that work could contribute to a person's well-being?
For me, for example, when I worked as a projectionist in a cinema for many years and then as a cinema attendant as well and that employment. And that was, I guess, the longest job I've had so far in Aotearoa. Yeah. That was for 7+ years. And to me, that job allowed me to form connections. It was actually probably one of the first times that I started meeting a broader group of locals in the workplace, and that actually helped me better navigate, say, government agencies, to have people that I know I could ask about how just systems worked. And obviously it gave me a level of, I mean, it wasn't the best paid job, and in fact, you know, I probably always tethered close to the minimum wage in that job. But it still nonetheless gave me a level of security that obviously one would find it difficult to access at the moment without employment, which I'm not saying it should be that way, but that was the reality at the time. And so for me, being in employment has contributed to finding a sense of connection and belonging, but it obviously also has come with challenges where I realized that the sort of completely scattered way in which I was giving hours, where one could go from having full-time hours to basically no hours the week after, like was not really something that was good practice.
And
at the time it felt normal.
That's right. Not a lot of new people when they come to Aotearoa know what the employment rights are. Do you think most migrants and refugees in Aotearoa can currently say that they have these conditions?
I would say that many migrants and refugees are currently facing some form of exploitation. And I think that's really nuanced kind of thing, because it's a mix of many of us come from countries with really loose labor market laws and very few protections. But at the same time, if you're feeling isolated, if English isn't your first language, if you don't have close friends in the workplace that you're in, it can feel hard to raise employment issues when you see them happening. Or if you're already entering a workplace where exploitation is normalized, it can feel like it's just how things are. And so, yeah, I would say that a great percentage of migrants and refugees are not in good work. And this is through no fault of their own, but it is a mix of the rules that have been created with all the additional challenges and isolation that comes with the migrant experience.
So how can we address this gap?
It's twofold, right? I think, because I don't want to put the onus just on the worker to, I guess, find a solution themselves. I think it comes with a mix of advocacy to change employment laws to ensure that migrants and refugees are better protected. In my view, it also comes with better resourcing the community organizations that on the ground are doing the work to connect migrants and refugees with support services where the education happens around what are your basic employment rights. And then it also looks like the union movement having a stronger connection with migrant workers and refugees in employment to make sure that all these unique challenges that one can experience are being touched on by the people and the sort of organizations, like the unions, for example, that are there to support and protect workers.
What's preventing this from happening at the moment?
I think part of the issue is that a lot of the employment issues that migrants and refugees experience are being swept under the carpet. I think we have often been seen as political footballs, and that's just, unfortunately, the reality of it. And then the other challenge is that we have not had the resources available to unlock the potential of our communities on the ground. So we know that the expertise from workers' rights advocates from within migrant and refugees communities exists. It's just that most of the organizations doing the mahi are often just kind of on the breadline themselves.
Yeah.
So I think the potential is there. We just haven't really unlocked it. And some of it will require law changes as well. So, for example, address the inherent exploitation that comes with many of the visa types that exist at the moment.
What changes do you think we can bring out in that area so that we can support new migrants and refugees?
Yeah, so when we think about migrant workers, many of them are on visas that lock them in with a single employer. This is something that's so different from, say, if you were a New Zealand-born person, where your whole ability to stay in the country depends on that one single employer. So imagine that you're in the workplace. You're potentially being asked to work more hours than you should. You're being denied basic rights. But you also know that if you're racist, you could lose the employment that allows you to be in the country.
Yeah.
And so many advocates and researchers have long called for us to what we call decouple work visas from single employers that would allow migrant workers to leave exploitative conditions as soon as they realize that they're exploitative and they can have better mobility in the workplace. It's different. There's different issues when it comes to refugees. And I acknowledge that many of them don't have those kind of visa conditions attached to them. Yeah. And to me, that's more about having better resources in the community and on the ground to ensure that people can have the support networks they need to enter employment, to test whether that work is actually good. But I also acknowledge that many of our refugees are transitioning in and out of the benefit. Mm-hmm. And I think to me that having like good income support so that when we do have refugees who are transitioning in and out of the benefit, particularly in those initial years, that not being in employment doesn't throw you immediately into poverty, and that makes it hard to go back into employment. So I think it's both looking at the working conditions and then what else do we have that supports refugees while they're kind of finding their feet in this new country. Yeah.
All right. So what kind of processes can we put in place to make sure these changes take place?
Well, there's a lot of it comes with the place that I work with right now. So I think having strong advocacy from within migrant and refugee communities is really important, because at the end of the day, a lot of these issues are not identified by policymakers until the communities themselves highlight it to us. And even then, it takes a lot of years for them for that to then create change. I think the other one is also, I do think we need greater awareness from locals around the unique challenges that migrant workers and refugees face. I mean, I'm always heartened when I see locals who identify that exploitation is happening and they're able to actually support migrants and refugees to connect, for example, them with an organization or an MP. But I do think we do have a lot of lack of awareness from locals around the unique challenges that our migrants and refugees communities face when it comes to employment issues and more broadly. So I think it's a multi-pronged response, right? It's government taking more action. It's resourcing the community groups. It's having greater awareness on the ground at an individual level as well.
Okay. What kind of resources and where would they come from, you think, can help this?
Well, when it comes to resources to community organizations, having worked in the community sector before becoming an MP, we know that community organizations can do a lot with very little. And actually, like, a very little extra resourcing goes a long, long way.
Yeah.
Because often the community organizations are filling the gap of where government agencies are not, at the moment, able to provide services. And I also want to acknowledge that that shouldn't have to be the way. Of course, government agencies should be equipped to engage with migrant and refugee communities, but government already has the resources available to unlock the potential of our community organizations to serve more migrants and refugees, to say, for example, have more reliable funding. Those resources exist. It's a matter of political decisions at the end of the day, which is why this whole issue is really sad, because in some ways, all the solutions are at the tip of our fingers.
Yeah.
And we just got to get the policymakers and in some way our local communities to also realize why this matters to them. Because if migrant workers and refugees are facing exploitation, that lowers the conditions for local workers, and it should be in local communities' interest to ensure that migrants and refugees are not exploited.
Aye, that is right. What kind of indicators could let us know that we are in the right track to making the employment experience equal for everyone in Aotearoa?
So at the moment, one of the things that we're not particularly good at reporting is the gender and ethnic wage gap. And that is a really good way of identifying whether, for example, people are being given the same opportunities and outcomes when they're in work. But what I mean by that is we shouldn't have people in the same role being paid very different wages, especially if they're doing basically the same mahi. But it is happening. We know that it is happening, and that the wage gap, the difference in pay, it's big along gender lines, but if you add ethnicity to that, it becomes even greater. And so that is something that needs addressing. We need better transparent reporting so that it's not shameful to talk about the wages that you're getting with your peers. But then also other indicators that we could be using are things like, are our government agencies responding to migrant exploitation quickly? Are we ensuring that we have people who enter into exploitation visas who then can go into secure work? There's many other things we could use as measures, but I do think a good place to start that I think would cover both migrant and refugee workers would be issues like better reporting on ethnic wage gap.
What would change if we had an ethnic pay report?
It would validate what people on the ground have been telling us for quite some time. So it would bring to the surface the fact that we do have an ethnic wage gap, that it is happening. By reporting on that, it would be the first step to then ensure that policymakers and decision makers and employers can't hide and can't pretend it's not an issue. But then it's also what we do after, right? It's about then what proactive steps are employers taking to tackle it. It would also allow workers to have those challenging conversations with their employers and their union representatives about having better contracts and employment agreements that tackle it. But then I think, again, reporting is one part, and then we've got to get the policymakers to act on the data and evidence that they see afterwards.
Is there any policy that's looking into this right now, currently?
There was some work in the previous government around the gender pay gap, but the ethnic wage gap is something that has been really ignored, and that is part of the challenge, right, is that we've got to take an intersectional lens to how we do policies to address inequities. Otherwise, we entrench the discrimination that we know exists that prevents migrants and refugees from tapping into their full potential. And unless we start thinking along those lines of also considering our migrant and refugee communities when we make policies such as reporting on wage gaps, we will keep pushing these issues under the carpet and they'll continue happening.
Okay, so how can we make sure that the policies that are being implemented once they've been approved, how do you make sure that the employers are implementing them when these policies do get approved, if they do get approved?
Well, part of the issue that we have in Aotearoa is that we've got a lot of mechanisms in which workers could raise concerns around exploitation, but then the bodies, the groups of people that are supposed to enforce these are not well-resourced. So we have this kind of wing of government agencies called like WorkSafe, for example. They're supposed to investigate issues where exploitation is happening, but we know that they're very under-resourced. We have the unions that are also there to support our workers, but decades ago, they were gutted by previous people in power, and now they're still catching up to better serve our community. So I think resourcing the bodies, the groups of people that are there to literally enforce, and by that I mean to make sure that wherein there is an issue, they have the ability to force the employer to change practices, is really, really important. And this is why we do need locals on the ground who care about these issues. Because as I said before, unless we have good enforcement mechanisms, if an employer knows that they can pay less to a migrant worker, why would they be looking at a local, right? When they know they have a pool of people that they can access to, that they can exploit, and that exploitation goes into the carpet. And so like that lowers wages for everyone. So this is why enforcement mechanisms are important. In Aotearoa, we often go through periods, and it's very normal, where we don't have a huge influx of migrants. We just came from the border closure where we didn't have very few migrants coming into the country at the time, including refugees. And now, post the border reopening, there was kind of this lag, and now we do have a lot of migrant workers. We're trying to catch up with the refugee quota. But then all the agencies that were supposed to kind of help are now playing catch up. And so this is why it's so critical to have those informed mechanisms, because right now, as we've just come off the back of experiencing a lot of influx of people coming in after a dry spell, it's where a lot of those stuffs are kind of going under the carpet. And we are seeing a lot of stories in the news, right, of the construction companies that are closing, a lot of migrant workers who were promised full-time hours, and then they arrived here and turns out that they were actually no jobs available for them. Many of them have paid tens of thousands of dollars just to get a visa.
Yes.
And that's a form of trafficking, if you want to put it really bluntly, right? But then at the same time, you also got asylum seekers and or people who are, while trying to navigate their claims, like are having to work under the table. And that also creates a huge influx of exploitation And right now, with all the conflict happening in the world, it's so important that asylum seekers and refugees are looked after, because with more conflict comes more people having to move countries and to relocate.
Would the wider country benefit from the migrants and refugees achieving their full potential if we look after them properly? What's your views on that?
We all benefit from our migrant and refugee communities being looked after. I think the only people who wouldn't are the exploitative employers, but they're few. Actually, it's in most people's interest to ensure that this happens. And again, as I've said earlier, the reason why I think local communities should care and local workers should care, it's because, as I've mentioned earlier, if you're an employer who you know you can have access to people you can exploit, where those people won't be able to raise their concerns in a way that it changes that employer's practice, you're going to be hiring locals expecting them to do the same. And we see that in many industries, right? Like horticulture, hospitality, construction, areas where migrant exploitation is rife. We also know that lowers working conditions for locals. And then we have those employers complaining about locals not wanting to work in those fields.
Yeah.
When it's like, well, of course, like many locals wouldn't be attracted to those areas because the working conditions are terrible.
Yeah.
Because they rely on migrant exploitation to exist.
We've heard you say we should look beyond work. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I want to acknowledge, particularly with our refugee community when they come here, is that many of them start their journey in Aotearoa on the benefit.
Yeah.
But many of them are doing things that I would consider that they're work, like looking after your family, looking after your kids, or looking after your parents. Like, that's a form of work. It may not be in the formal employment kind of sense, but actually, if you're having to do caregiving work and you're not set up to succeed, that actually prevents you from being in a place where if you do want to go into employment, you then have debt, you then have issues in the household. And this is what I mean, that we've got to look at the income support system. Like, what are the mechanisms that we're using to support people as well? And for many of our communities who come from places where there's trauma, there's conflict, there may be genocides happening, you know, I want to acknowledge that many of them may need to take time off work to work through some of those challenges. And people should be supported to do that, because if you're carrying all of that as you try to transition into a new country and into work, that makes it more challenging. So all the things that set up a worker to succeed in their workplace have to do with the broader system, housing, mental health support, income support, etc. And all of those things should have an intersectional lens. You know, we should be thinking about housing from a migrant refugee lens. We should be looking at income support from that lens. And so it's taking a holistic approach to supporting people into employment too.
It's really awesome that you've just said that, because, you know, when I arrived into New Zealand, I come from a place where there's absolutely no support. You have to go out there and look for your work, and you work and you support your family. But when I came here, I had the same mentality. You know, you go out there and you look for things. But I did not know there was support, you know, that could help me as a migrant person. So you're saying that really atones to that. So what would you like to see different moving forward in future for yourself?
Yeah, I think what I would love to see changed is having policies that acknowledge the inherent right that we all have to a life with dignity. You know, when I think about all the conversations happening recently around Te Tiriti particularly, you know, many talk about how Te Tiriti is an invitation for all of us to be looked after.
Yes.
And if we're to honor that, that means not having the crown allowing exploitation to happen, where we don't have migrants tied to a single employer, where we don't have people coming into the country and immediately being pushed below the poverty line. And those are policies that I would love to see changed. You know, I could go into really technical detail around what each of those means from a lawmaking perspective, but I think at its core is just ensuring that migrants and refugees are treated with respect and dignity at all policy levels. And that will take some work, but I do think it's achievable and it's in the interest of everyone.
Well, I hope we all as a community work together towards that goal, yeah? Are there any projects or campaigns you are currently involved with?
So over the past few years, I have gotten myself involved in a few campaigns in relationship to migrant and refugee communities. I think one of the areas that I would love to see address and some of the campaigns that I have been involved with is with a group called Migrants Against the Acceptable Standards of Health. They're a group of disabled migrants and from refugees who have highlighted the particular intersections that disabled migrants face when it comes to settling in Aotearoa. Right now, we discriminate disabled migrants and former refugees to the point that our immigration laws don't have to necessarily comply with our Human Rights Act, which means we could be deporting disabled migrants who could be in employment already, right? Just because of the disability and because they're seen to be just the cost to the system. And that in and of itself, A, to the point around treating people with respect and dignity, that doesn't cover it. B, you also send a message to locals that your disability is an inherent negative thing when it comes to employment. And that creates more barriers for people to enter employment as well. So that's one of the campaigns that I've been the proudest to be part of, mostly because it's been driven by disabled migrants themselves. But I've also been involved in things around an amnesty for overstayers and acknowledging that our people without a valid visa are some of the most exploited migrants in the whole country, as well as acknowledging that, you know, if you've got former refugees who are in employment but are having to worry about their family members who they haven't been reunificated with overseas, that actually creates a huge amount of stress in the workplace. And so I think, you know, family reunification for former refugees is really, really important, because otherwise you're having to take a lot of time off. You have to live with the stress of not knowing whether your family will be okay, and that actually impacts your ability to be grounded in work.
Wow. Okay. Where can people hear more from you, or how do our listeners connect with you in the future if they want to get a hold of you? How do we do that?
Email is probably the easiest way. I'm on ricardo.march@parliament.govt.nz.
Awesome.
If you're on social media, I'm most active on Instagram. You can just type my name. But if people want to sort of discuss something quite formal or a bit more sensitive, like, email's the best way to keep in touch.
Awesome.
If you just want to follow my mahi, Instagram's the best place to do it.
Awesome. Excellent. I think we can all jump on that, Waka, and support you so that you can support this kaupapa that you're, you know, rowing towards in the future. Is there any other last words you want to share with us or the listeners before we finish up?
I think we all have far more in common with each other than we do with the few wealthy employers that don't want to change the system so that every worker is treated with respect and dignity. And I think if we can all remember how much we actually have in common with one another, that I think sets the ground for all of us being on board with changing things so that everybody is looked after. And I think that means that also we have more migrants and refugees engage on Te Reti issues, engage in Indigenous rights issues, but then we also build solidarity so that local people have it in their interest to support the rights of our communities too.
Awesome. That is wonderful. I think that was really, really lovely for you to share those awesome views with us and with our listeners. And with that, we'd like to say thank you for coming into studio with us sharing those lovely words with us. And with that, we are out. Thank you very much.
Nga mihi.
Nga mihi. That was our Pass the Mic episode. Check out the rest of our season dedicated to the employment experience of migrants and former refugees. Share your favorite episodes and subscribe to our channel. If you haven't already, go back to our first Pass the Mic series, which highlights a range of ethnic experiences in Aotearoa. Our employment season is a collaboration between Belong Aotearoa, Foundation North and Planet FM, with assistance from Voice of Aroha. You can find the link to these organizations in the bio.
Never miss your favourite shows again. Click on to planetaudio.org.nz.
cigarettes were lying there. Jacket hung on the chair the way I left it last night. Everything was in play, everything seemed alright. She was missing. Last night I dreamed the sky went black. You were drifting down, couldn't get back. Lost in trouble, so far from home. I reached for you, my arms were like stone. Woke me when you're missing.
So far away from home. don't have a friend who feels at ease. I don't know a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. Oh, but it's all right. It's all right. For we lived so well, so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. I can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong. And I dreamed I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose unexpectedly. Looking back down at me, smiled reassuringly. And I dreamed I was flying. And high up above, my eyes could clearly see the Statue of Liberty sailing away to sea. And I dreamed I was flying. Oh, we come on the ship they call the Mayflower. We come on the ship that sails the moon. We come in the ages most uncertain hours and sing an American tune. Oh, and it's alright. It's alright, it's alright. You can't be for. Tomorrow's gonna be another working day. I'm trying to get some rest. That's all I'm trying to get some rest.
You can make radio with funding support through New Zealand On Air. Complete the application on planetaudio.org.nz/make radio.
I wish a buck was still silver. It was back when the country was strong. Before Elvis, before the Vietnam War came along, before the Beatles and yesterday, when a man could still work, still would. It's the best of the free life behind us now, and are the good times really over for good? And are we rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell? With no kind of chance for the flag or the Liberty Bell. Wish a Ford and a Chevy would still last 10 years like they should. It's the best of the free life behind us now. Are the good times really over for good? I wish Coke was still cola and a joint. A bad place to be. And it was back before Nixon